So from our sutra book, we have a chant in here, which is our meal chant. It's our Oriyoki chant. And the Oriyoki chant closes with some words spoken by the chant leader only. And those words are, abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. If you've been to retreat, you've heard those words countless times. Your knees were probably in such agony you didn't even hear them. Oriyoki is a relatively long practice of sitting with bowls in front of you and wrapping and unwrapping utensils and et cetera, et cetera. And at the very end of it, this chant is said. So one more time, just to read it for you. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. So interesting to encounter the chant that Susan selected as well. This interesting exploration of the way that when the mind gives rise to the concept of mind, then the relationship between mind and body begins. Like a wave noticing itself in the ocean and realizing, I'm a wave. And beginning to think of itself as a distinct and separate identity. We all do this. We do this with our own minds. We think my mind is separate, maybe even separate from my own body. And of course, the whole time we are also water, not separate at all. And the wave, as it flows through the ocean, it is actually the ocean flowing through the wave. But the wave, quite attached to this curl and that noise that it likes to make, assumes that it is a separate thing. And that... And in a way, of course, it is. We can look at the wave, right? And we can track it with our eye. We can say, this is a distinct wave. And it will end. It comes to the lip of the ocean and land and seems to disperse and cease to exist. This is one story about the wave. This is one way of talking about its existence. It is born, it lives, it dies, it is separate, it is lonely. And one way of talking about ourselves, one way of talking about our minds, one way of talking about our experience. It's not entirely wrong, of course, right? It is a description, it's one way of looking at things. And, of course, the wave is water. The wave does not ever cease to exist because it never really was what it thought it was. Always made of the ocean, not really going anywhere. This two of us, this way that each of us is truly is the air we breathe, the food we eat, the sunlight touching our skin, truly part of something grand and beautiful. And our minds incorporating all of this, our minds in fact made of all of this, not separate in the least bit. We don't always live from that place. We don't always feel this to be true. We don't always know this. And yet, as we sit often, as we sit together, perhaps we begin to feel our connectedness even with one another. Perhaps we hear the bell in a new way that we can't tell whether it is the bell or the air or our mind ringing. We begin to sense into this intimacy, this non-duality, where the sense of separateness falls away. We've all tasted it in other places as well. Eating, for example. Where does the food become you? That separateness between you and your taste buds and the food falls away in the sumptuousness. You're just chewing. Music, listening to music, the sense that the music is in you. Perhaps you were on acid at the time. And of course, a ridiculousness about that, because it's not needed. Truly, it is part of us. That intimacy always true, not just possible, but true. We just think differently and don't always see it. And that, again, is okay. Except that we, when we believe those thoughts of separation too much, we suffer. We suffer a sense of loneliness. We begin to build walls around ourselves and protect ourselves, and a great concern about this self that is separate and what we think of it. not so good, or whatever. And there goes the what Trungpa calls the bureaucracy of ego, folding things into itself as if it were a separate entity. Quite a painful load to carry around sometimes. Our practice doesn't make that stop. I think that is a bit idealistic. But we can at least begin to see that this is the mechanism at work. And we can begin to recognize the actual, that this is a mental formation. That this sense of separateness is a mental formation. Useful at times, you know, nice to be able to separate a good surfing wave from one that's not so good. But challenging for us because it blinds us to something that is connecting and satisfying, that is really quite a source of love for us and joy. So this idea of being too caught in these stories, that's where we really suffer. So we kind of begin to learn to hold our senses of self lightly, at least more lightly. This is where we can learn from the great Zen master, Jeff Bridges. The dude abides. What is this abiding that we have here in this chant? Abiding in this ephemeral world, like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. We bow to Buddha because, thus, right? Because the mind is pure and goes beyond. What does the mind go beyond? Well, one thing is the sense of separateness. Yes, that is a feeling, and it is useful to know that that a stick is not a hot dog. And to touch a stick is to be deeply connected with it, to feel its texture in your own skin. To let it be part of you in that way, to let it be part of your consciousness, of your own mind. To let the sound of the bell, to let one another into our hearts, quite vulnerable and quite brave, to practice in that open way. And when we do this, it's a feeling of compassion, of love. The words can fail at that time, but it is a feeling like, wow, okay, bowing. I'm bowing. Gratitude here. Gratitude for the way things are. To abide. To abide, to accept, to act in accordance with. To accept and act in accordance with this ephemeral world. Like a lotus in muddy water. What is that pointing to? What a beautiful phrase. Now there's a risk, of course. It's a simile, and all similes fall apart. Metaphors have their limits, so we have to be careful. If you interpret this and take it too far, you can think that, oh, I'm the lotus and the world is the muddy water, and I'm going to let that shit bounce off me, nothing going to touch me. That is not how I interpret this. I don't think the muddy water is separate from the lotus. The muddy water is precisely what nourishes the lotus. The muddy water courses through the lotus, offering it nourishment. The lotus springs directly from the muddy water. It is indeed made of muddy water. Not separate. And there is something about this practice of sitting still here and abiding that makes us like that lotus. Here we are, sitting. Each of us awake to the sensation of cushions beneath us, the little humming fan in the basement, our breath, the sounds of the environment, and perhaps thoughts or feelings entering into this space. Maybe not abiding thoughts. Maybe thoughts of rejection or lingering memories or anticipation, anxiety, whatever it may be. To abide is not to control this ephemeral realm, this ephemeral world. It's to accept it. So whatever may be arising, right? We can accept non-acceptance. Our practice to be on the cushion and simply be awake to the phenomena that are here arising. Maybe a story of separateness. He says that stuff about me being water. That's crazy. I'm a separate wave. Get out of my business. So we just notice whatever arises for us, and we can accept it. We don't have to do anything, because what we are abiding in is an ephemeral world. Everything constantly changing, everything in motion, like a wave, a constellation that comes into existence. We call it ourselves. But the ingredients of that constellation are ever changing. And by sitting on the cushion again and again, we see that. We may encounter parts of ourselves, we call them reactivity, PTSD, deep, painful experiences that may arise for us that we encounter, and it feels like it's for the 50th time or 1,000th time. Something comes up in us and it's deeply painful, hard, hard to bear. We feel that we need to fix things externally. We need to change people and make our situation different. Incredibly hard to tolerate. And for short periods, we come here and we don't do it. We abide and notice the ephemerality of these reactions. And as we practice this again and again, without needing to control what arises, we come to see more and more clearly that these formations have no particular concrete substance. They are fluid, they are flowing. They are dependent on causes and conditions and circumstances and what we ate for lunch. The causes and conditions, quite endless. I often don't even know what's causing me to feel the way I'm feeling anymore. It could have been, you know, a glimpse of a sad child the day before, somehow fallen out of my memory, arising for me as I wake up in the morning. Ooh, a wave. We're so interconnected in that sense that it's very hard sometimes to even trace cause and effect. The storied mind wants to tell you this is the story, this is the reason, this is the cause, this thing right here. Wants to point to something, put something in the center. Sometimes that story that we tell is that it's I in the center. Or perhaps we're blaming something else. Well, that's the thing that's in the center of it all. But in a very deep sense, the longer we practice, the more we see that we don't actually know. We start to see all these things as mental arisings, as empty. Now, that doesn't mean non-existent, but it means shape-shifting and fluid. As we were driving here tonight, looking out the car window at these flowers that burst seemingly out of nowhere, burst into existence like fireworks, and frequently disappear moments later like the cherry blossoms, celebrated for their beauty and their impermanence. This is a way of an entryway to this notion of emptiness. It's not that things don't exist, but everything is constantly shape-changing and a constellation. The flower buds themselves, made of rainwater and sunlight and earth, exploding into existence and disappearing right back into the ocean of existence, just like every thought we've ever had. To abide, to accept the ephemerality of the world, it's quite beautiful in its impermanence, and yet, while each form is utterly impermanent, everything is always here. Quite a miracle, quite reliable. We find that though we can't depend on any particular form, or any particular understanding or mental representation of the universe or the world, there is nonetheless something that we can rely on, something quite beyond our conceptual capacity. I don't know frees us to encounter what is. What is here now? I don't know.